Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm Dominic Mills-Howell, and today I'll be presenting on Fortifying the Foundations, Elevating Security in NixonNixOS. Before I get into the talk, I'll give a brief introduction to myself. I'm a software engineer that's broadly interested in application development, build system compilers, and algorithms. And I've served in varying capacities in different open source projects, such as being a mentor under the Palisades Foundation and Haskell.org under the Google Summer of Code program for 3 years. In addition to that, I've also been a participant of Google Summer of Code-like programs such as Summer of Haskell and Summer of Nix, which I both participated in last year. And now to get to the meat of the matter, today I'll be presenting on this talk, which is about the various features that were implemented during the Sovereign Tech Fund's Contribute Back Challenge, which occurred in the fourth quarter of last year. And the Sovereign Tech Fund is essentially a fund mandated by the German government that seeks to support the development, improvement, and maintenance of open digital infrastructure. So Nix was one of the 9 selected projects in 2023, and the focus was on 3 aspects. But this talk will be mainly focused on the first aspect, which is a proper boot security chain for NixOS. This was chosen because it's easily the most expansive and arguably the more interesting of the three. So let's get into it. So you know, I assume many of you use Linux, or because why wouldn't you? And and I know that you know when you first installed, like whenever that was, when you first installed Linux, you had to disable secure boot in order to proceed with installation, and it's very commonplace for us to just disable secure boot and just completely relinquish that thought of ever having a dual booted Windows and Linux machine, because why would you? And essentially, what we're interested in is in implementing this boot security feature in NixOS. And that consists of, you know, a number of different facets. But historically, there were 2 earlier implementations, Lanzaboot and another one developed by Determinate Systems, Bootspec Secure Boot. Yeah, sorry, it's literally on the screen. And but they were a bit unsatisfactory in the sense that they required one to first install NixOS in an insecure manner and then modify the configuration file in order to apply, well, Lanzaboot in particular, in order to apply Lanzaboot, then, you know, Nix switch rebuild, and then you'd have secure boot after you've made, you know, your necessary configurations for your machine. And for you as an end user, that maybe is fine, but say you're using NixOS on some kind of network or some kind of cloud server, or you're trying to, you know, find a way to kind of deterministically build some kind of server farm. It's not really satisfactory, because if you're providing some kind of service like that, then you pretty much leave yourself susceptible to things such as like bootkits that can basically take control of your entire system from the boot process onwards. And essentially, you kind of want to, you know, adapt yourself to a secure boot story in NixOS in the sense that you want secure boot to be the default option once you get the NixOS installer and put it in your device and you boot it up on a new machine. You don't really want to have to turn off secure boot. You want to essentially have an option where you can have secure boot by default on NixOS the moment you've begun to install it. And this consists of a number of different steps. I mean, the secure boot is essentially just a chain of trust such that, you know, various components from the inception of the booting process just kind of sign one another. And the methodology that we kind of took in this approach was basically to use a unified kernel image, because it would keep everything in one particular place. You won't really have to worry about, say, booting, you know, init rd and init msd or msd or on the kernel and whatnot. You basically have everything in one place and you just kind of have to sign that and then you go forward from there. And how that works is that essentially secure boot is a very Microsoft-centric thing. So you kind of have to adapt the Knicks image that you're building to accommodate for that. And what that means is that you translate the language into the language of portable executables. So what that means is that you kind of have to create new structures in order to manage these portable executables in such a way that you can have Microsoft keys on your machine and Secure Boot will work. You don't necessarily have to have Microsoft keys per se. You can install your own personal keys. But the problem with that is that the chances of you breaking something are astronomically high. So it's probably best to have something that has Microsoft keys. And loosely speaking, what I mean by has Microsoft keys means that somewhere on your laptop, there's like a sticker that says Microsoft somewhere. And that usually means the machine, the UEFI has, Unified Extensible Firmware Interface has Microsoft keys, has Microsoft keys in its database. And how this was done implementation-wise was that we essentially used something called a meta writer structure because we couldn't think of a better name. And what this does is not necessarily modified portable executable in and of itself, but more or less kind of begins to recreate it from scratch, kind of looking at every single aspect of it and then modifying that accordingly to accommodate for what changes we want. So the reason why we had to do this is because portable executables are very, for lack of a better word, say volatile. It's not really meant to be cross-platform and anything like that. It's more or less meant to be made for just Microsoft-type products and Microsoft-type products only. And basically, you kind of have to look at a lot of the headers and see how they're related to one another. If you mess up, if you write the wrong data to the wrong header, or if you have a data section somewhere and it doesn't link to somewhere else, you've bricked your system again. So you don't want to have this type of issue anymore. You basically want something that is already developed, quote unquote, in-house and just works from the get-go. And essentially, this was accomplished. If you actually look on the NixOS issue, you'll see that Linus Heckelman, whose GitHub name is Linux Hackerman, and I often forget what his real name is, but actually did manage to construct a NixOS shim with an embedded self-signed certificate. So that part is done. But there are actually two aspects to the story. The second aspect is to send this shim to the shim review committee, which is basically a bunch of independent, they're affiliated with Microsoft in some way or another. And this allows one to kind of, for the uninitiated, a shim is just a first stage bootloader. So just a bootloader that can load an operating system or another bootloader. And what this essentially means is that once this gets reviewed by the shim review committee, means that they say, yeah, okay, we can give you some Microsoft keys and you can sign the ISO and everything should work. So we're currently in that stage where we're able to construct a NixOS shim that can embed a self-signed certificate, but we haven't yet got the green light from the shim review committee, but there's nothing to indicate that we shouldn't. And more or less, this is so far the Secure Boot story in the broadest possible way. But more specifically, there are other aspects such as the boot spec specification. So this is boot spec version 1, and a part of the work done during this project was creating a boot spec version 2. So you're probably wondering, why do we need a version 2? Version 1 looks good already. There's nothing dynamic about it. It's just a JSON document. What could be wrong? Well, initRD only has it can only take one argument, a string, when in actuality that doesn't fill the entire gamut of the entire spectrum of you could have multiple initRDs essentially. And that's usually the case if you have, say, some global user settings, some specific user settings, some environment settings that you've changed, and usually these are end up becoming some CPIO archive files somewhere. And So you essentially want that to be a list, because you, and also you can also dynamically generate initRD from the EFS. So yeah, you could just end up with a lot of initRD files that just spring out of nowhere. So that one isn't very satisfactory because it doesn't consider all the use cases. And you also see initRD secrets, but here's the funny thing. There's actually nothing secret about initRD secrets. The secret in initRD secrets is a plain text file. So it doesn't actually provide any form of security. And ultimately, this is what Bootspec version 2 looks like. So initRD now has, it's a list. You can add things to your list to eventually put them together, and then that satisfies the most general case possible. FDT dir, that's not really going to be discussed here, but essentially it's just to consider the case of using DAS uBoot. And device trees, we didn't have support for device trees previously, but we do now with Bootspec version 2. So what we've done with initRD secrets is that we've basically used a hashing method. It's a very boring hashing method, so it's now more secret. It's actually a secret. You don't have a plain text file anymore. And this is the difference between Bootspec version 1 and Bootspec version 2. And this is somewhat of a segue from security. It's tangentially related, but it's still a very important feature nonetheless. So we define AB schema to refer to a type of primary and secondary boot partition, wherein if the primary boot partition fails, you'll switch to secondary. And then this is generalized into something that's called automatic boot assessment in NixOS. And what this means is essentially, if I want to load a NixOS generation and it fails for some reason, and the most practical way this would fail, to give a concrete example, is if you went into Nix packages unstable and got that package AMD GPU, and you realize you can't boot into your generation. I know this from experience. So this is an example of where this would be useful. And essentially what it does is that it generalizes AB schema to NixOS generation. So, you know, in that case, you had a very simple case before, and it's designated as an indeterminate with a specific number of boot attempts. So you have some predetermined number of boot attempts that you want to have, and then eventually, once you've gone past that, then it's no longer deemed as a good boot. Your count is decremented every single time, and then it's designated bad. And this is useful in the case that, say, you have some kind of procedure where you have unattended boot. So maybe you have some kind of build farm, maybe you have some kind of service where you have to boot into some specific NixOS generation. Maybe you're using NixOS as a replacement for Ansible. And you add things to NixOS, you add new services, maybe some of the services are from Nix packages unstable, and it's more or less everything is automated. This is the use case where that would be useful, where if somehow you magically find a way to upgrade things without you having to touch the Nix configuration file, then automatic boot assessment will take care of the fact that your generation may be corrupt and you may have to switch back to an earlier generation after a certain number of boot attempts. And this is an example for an authoritative DNS. The parameter boot complete specifies what you call a synchronization point. What that means is that it eventually just cycles back. So we haven't specified the number of boot attempts here. I don't believe it's a default. This work was actually driven by Julian Malka, who is giving a talk on this. I really hope it's not the same example he uses, because I didn't ask him before. But more or less, this is an example of where you'd have a type of service that has a specific number of boot attempts that needs to be done. And you can use this automatic boot assessment to just count the number of times that it would be completed. And if not, your failure action is to reboot. You could also specify the number of times it could be rebooted, but I don't believe that's done here. And another feature is integrity checks for the Nix store. So When implementing Secure Boot and transitioning to stage two, limitations do arise. You know, you can mess with the file system essentially. If essentially you don't really have anything in place to prevent that from happening, and a number of different things were tried. So, for example, DM Verity, which works on the block device layer, was used, but it was unsatisfactory in the sense that it basically creates an entire copy of your NixOS file, NixOS generation, which takes up a lot of space and doesn't really provide any means of flexibility to work around that. FS Verity works on the file level, the file system level, but it doesn't. Oh, DM Verity is also read only. That's the reason why you have to. Why it takes the entire NixOS generation. FS Verity works on the file level, so that's a big improvement over DM Verity, but it doesn't prevent you from kind of just switching files at that point either. So you could easily switch between Bash and Perl and whatnot. IMA and EVM. IMA is intermediate measured assessment, and EVM is extended verification measurement for system integrity. They more or less have the same problems as FS Verity, and they're really only good for auditing purposes. Like they don't really help us that much in terms of our intended goal of looking at the file system and seeing if it gets past stage two. So what was essentially chosen was the simplest method, which is just to use NixStore Verify. And the problem with this is that there's a penalty for it. If you have a low-end device such as a Raspberry Pi, you probably have to wait 2 minutes extra for it to boot. And if you have a high-end device, more or less like a desktop machine, there's still a five-second penalty. And there are we're currently considering such as Apple's verification, Apple's signed file system, which looks promising, but has to be combined with something like bcatchfs or bcatchf or something to kind of really make it a viable option. And this isn't this is just speculation. We haven't this work is actually driven by Will Fanacher, whose GitHub name is Elvish Jericho. So he's done the research for this, but he hasn't. And this is the end result of it. But in terms of future work, he's looking at considering whether to use that mechanism that I just mentioned a while ago, which is to use Apple's signed signature volumes to verify the NixStore in stage two. So enabling integrity checks looks as such. You have to first create a public file key, and then in the NixOS module, you essentially import that into the trusted public keys. Using boot when during the boot init verify configuration, and it's really just as simple as that. The only issue is that you may have to find a way to kind of hide your file key somewhere if you're in a situation where you have the boot unattended. And lastly, interpreters in Nix. So Nix essentially has a lot of Bash and Perl and Python scripts all about the place, and this leaves a lot of room for vulnerabilities. And in phase one, essentially all the Perl scripts were removed. So setup etc.pl with setup users and whatnot, that's replaced by overlays in initrd, update users groups.pl, that's replaced by sys users functionality. And the broad replacement of activation scripts, that actually isn't necessary for this, but it does work in terms of performance and in terms of gaining performance and maintainability benefits. So this is, I failed to mention that this was just like phase one of this challenge. We're still waiting on the status of phase two, but phase two would also involve removal of Bash scripts. I'm not entirely sure how Python scripts would be removed, because they're more tightly integrated. Like for example, if you try to use a NixOS test, you'd end up having to use Python. You'd have to write it in Python at some point. So it's not clear to me exactly how that path forward there. But Pearl has been removed in this phase of the Sovereign Tech Fund's Contribute Back Challenge, and in the future, eventually Bash should be removed. So, yeah, that's my talk. Any questions? No questions? Okay. Well, feel free to reach out.
For the store verification, how about a little fuse file system wrapper that verifies store paths on first access?
Well, how would you verify? Like, what would we use to verify them? So Elko is asking, how would we verify? Can we use just the hashes from the NIC store to verify the files themselves? And I'm not sure where the hashes are stored, to be honest. But I mean,
NICs,
okay. Okay. I'm not sure. I'd have to circle back and get and I'll get back to you on that. Yeah.
If there's no other questions, let's give it up again for Dominic.
So feel free to reach out.